Today I'm joined by Nico, a geopolitical analyst and the founder of geopoliticalmonitor.com and leftlib.org. Nico, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me, James.
All right, Nico, in your research, what have you found in terms of the geopolitical situation at the moment that might be potential flashpoint issues or things that people should be watching for?
Well, I think generally you can understand what's going on in the world today based on the status and situation of the United States and the American Empire. So the American Empire rose to dominance post-World War II when Europe was in ruin, and the United States both increased its production capacity but also implemented the Bretton Woods Agreement, which saw European countries abandon the gold standard and instead hold American dollars as their foreign reserves. And what this meant was that the United States was then able to print money, inflation and interest-free, and then use that money to build their military and to increase their power. And in the 1970s, things started to change, however, when the United States, their oil peaked. They stopped producing the same amount of oil they were previously, and then they ran into trouble with Vietnam. OPEC implemented their cartel, and the United States was forced to abandon its $35 pegged gold. And since then, we've seen a steady decline of the United States and the American Empire worldwide as they've outsourced their production capacity to places like China and have steadily decreased their oil production. And it's important to recall that at one point, the United States was the world's number one oil producer. So all these factors have culminated into the start of the recession that we see today as the United States continues to expand the money supply, which is backed by nothing, and as countries that hold American dollars in their foreign reserve become increasingly annoyed that the United States is eroding their wealth, we see more and more agitation geopolitically and the United States having a more and more tenuous hold on its military strength and empire.
And what are some of the signs of this decaying American empire power?
Well, we can start with, we can go around the world and look at it, but we can start with South America, where the United States had intended, and when I say the United States, I don't necessarily mean the United States as the people of the United States. I mean those who control the United States and those who control the military and the financial system who are largely based in the U.S. So looking at South America first, the United States was intending to use South American oil, Venezuelan oil largely, to satisfy its own needs and then control the Middle Eastern oil in order to rein in China and other nations. And it's important to keep in mind that military capacity is linked to oil. Armies take huge amounts of oil to run, and the world basically operates based on oil. So not only does a country like the United States need to have oil for itself, by controlling world oil reserves, you essentially control the world. So South America, the plan was to control oil resources there in order to supply local demand and then control resources elsewhere to rein in other regions. But what we've seen with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Evo Morales in Bolivia, to a lesser extent, Ortega in Nicaragua, that the United States has lost its ability to control South American governments through assassinations and coups. You had the unsuccessful coup in Venezuela a number of years ago. So we have the U.S. losing control of South America and consequently losing its ability to control oil. You've seen a number of South American countries strengthen their ties with China as of late. China not producing any oil of its own is particularly aware and cognizant of the importance of building ties with oil-producing regions. And then we can look at the Middle East, where the United States has gotten bogged down with their military capacity stretched out throughout Iraq and Afghanistan. And this has allowed Russia to become increasingly bold as they reasserted themselves militarily, tying in with Belarus, which they've discussed creating a new country with, merging the two, essentially Russia taking over Belarus. You've had interference in the Ukraine and in Georgia with elections and assassinations. And perhaps most notably, you have the impending separation of Kosovo. And Russia is a staunch supporter of the established government there and is very much in opposition to the U.S. and EU intention of supporting an independent Kosovo. So those are some examples of how the United States' power is eroding and how the geopolitical situation is playing out. Underlying all of this is China's increasing strength. They've been pursuing an asymmetrical system of warfare where rather than trying to take the United States head-on militarily by building up its weapons and whatnot, it's instead been focusing on things like domination of the Internet and other capacities. And you see that playing out with the U.S., with the U.S. providing weapons to Taiwan and China in turn providing weapons to Iran, teaming up with Russia to prevent military intervention in Iran and working against American imperial interests.
To follow up on the idea that China is working to dominate through the Internet, I understand that China has also been caught launching cyber attacks on the Pentagon in the last year.
Absolutely. There have been all sorts of reports coming out in various media outlets that China has been launching a huge number of server attacks, various hacking methods to test and to better understand American military systems, which are now increasingly web-based, increasingly computer-based. So what that could mean in a potential military conflict, most likely involving the United States with Taiwan and control over the Taiwanese Strait, which is a major shipping route, you'd see the United States moving in support of Taiwan with their Navy, China responding by taking out American spy satellites, GPS satellites potentially, with the satellite weapons that they've been testing for some time, and then moving in with various techniques to deactivate or thwart American computer systems.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to the Middle East. Of course, recently the assassination of Bhutto was a major news issue. What has your research told you about that assassination?
Well, it's an assassination that was shocking yet predicted. I think Bhutto herself knew that when she was going back, she was facing assassination. Bhutto, prior to returning to Pakistan, wrote in a document and said that if she was assassinated, if she was attacked, to blame the military establishment, which has ties with the ISI, the Pakistani intelligence agency, and also to blame Musharraf and his group, which are very closely tied to the ISI and the military establishment. And the important thing to keep in mind in Pakistan is that, unlike other countries, the government is not in control. In Pakistan, the military is in control. So when you have someone in control of the political establishment, they don't have the ability to essentially rule the country. It's the military. And that's in part due to the fractured nature of Pakistan. You have various ethnic groups and various provinces that would likely fall apart if it wasn't for a strong and united military. So as to speculate as to who killed Bhutto, you can't know for sure, but you can certainly look to the ISI, which has ties to the CIA, not to say that the United States was involved, but I think the military establishment and the ISI were likely behind that. Now, that's a slightly ambiguous claim, because just who in the ISI and the military establishment involved is something for debate. But when Musharraf and when the United States say that Al-Qaeda was behind it, it's interesting, because on the one hand, it's ludicrous and not the case. It was the military establishment, most likely. Yet at the same time, it's accurate, because the CIA, the ISI, and Pakistani military establishment are so interconnected with Al-Qaeda, which has CIA roots, that in a sense, their misinformation campaign is also true. But the way that it's slanted is more deceptive than accurate.
Right. Well, of course, and one of the most recent examples of that link is that America has admitted to funding Al-Qaeda-linked organizations in Iran to bring down the Iranian government, or to commit destabilization operations in Iran at any rate. But turning to Iran for a moment, what do you make of the latest situation in the Straits of Hormuz?
Well, I don't think that that's really that significant of an incident, unless... I think that probably ties into George Bush's visit and George Bush trying to convince the other Gulf states, Saudi Arabia and UAE, the other Gulf Cooperative Council countries, that they should side with the U.S. in trying to alienate and oppose Iran. But fundamentally, any little incident like that doesn't change the fact that the United States just simply doesn't have the military capacity to have any sort of invasion or altercation with Iran, whether it be ground incursions where they burst in from Iraq and return back into the country, or air invasions. And that's the case not only because the U.S. military is tied down in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also because, unlike Iraq, which had been weakened with a decade of sanctions, Iran has a strong and functioning military. And when you combine that with the backing of Russia and China that will oppose any sort of sanction through the UN Security Council, it's just off the table. It's a non-starter.
Okay, interesting. Well, certainly the National Intelligence Estimate recently seemed to take it off the table, but I think people were surprised by the recent warmonger rhetoric regarding the Straits of Hormuz incident.
And that's the National Intelligence Estimate is interesting because I think what you see there, there's the inclination to think that it wasn't a divide within the U.S. elite and that it's some sort of... propaganda campaign or PSYOP. But I think what happened was you had a split between the hawks who saw invading Iran and continuing down that route as being essential despite the military and geopolitical realities. And then you saw people within the intelligence establishment who, yes, want to control Iran, but didn't want to see the United States bogged down for the next 10, 20 years. Meanwhile, having Russia force the United States' hand in Eastern Europe and on all these other regions because they don't have the capacity to counter other countries' ambitions.
So it's your opinion that the hawks have been defeated in that debate?
I think what you see is infighting between the various groups that dictate American foreign policy.
Interesting. Let's turn to Europe for a moment. What's happening in Europe at the moment that you think might be important in the geopolitical scene?
Well, you see the continuing expansion of the European Union. Not too long ago, borders were done away with so that there's more free movement between various countries. You see continuing instability to a certain extent in the Ukraine, where there's that fight between pro-Western groups and pro-Russian groups. And you see the same thing in Georgia and in a lot of the former USSR countries. So I think the major issue in the European region is in the east along the border with Russia, as Russia tries to reassert itself militarily and politically by gaining influence over all those former USSR countries. Meanwhile, the West, both the United States and the European Union, are attempting to gain influence over those countries through the European Union itself and also just through political maneuverings. And underlying that is the control of Russia and Gazprom over Europe by exporting most of Europe's gas. So that's a leverage that Russia is using, and it's kind of playing out in interesting ways. Europe is responding by trying to get alternative sources of gas coming in through Turkey, from Iraq and various other regions.
It is certainly a potential stranglehold for the Russian government to use in their negotiations at the moment. But it's interesting, Russia has been increasing the rhetoric recently about the U.S. anti-missile shield that they're planning on implementing in Poland by 2012.
Mm-hmm. It's called a defensive shield, but what it is an offensive weapon. Because by having a defensive shield, the United States can then use its nuclear arsenal or the threat of the nuclear arsenal as a card in their hand when implementing their agenda internationally. And that's not to say that they would necessarily use a nuclear weapon, but it would erode the balance, the nuclear deterrent balance of countries that do have nuclear weapons if there's a thought that if the United States were to invade and we were to respond using nuclear weapons, then the shield could potentially prevent that from going through and then leave the country open to nuclear attack itself. So it is very much an offensive step, and I think that for Poland at least, there's an element beyond the simple construction or non-construction of that system, and that's trying to play the United States and Russia off against one another in order to either mend its relationships with Russia or more likely to gain security concessions by the United States so that if Russia tried to bully Poland, and this is especially important if Belarus teams up with Russia as it has been, then the United States military would be there to back Poland.
All right, and let's turn to Africa. I understand on your website, geopoliticalmonitor.com, you have a recent situation report about Zimbabwe. What can you tell us about the situation in Zimbabwe?
Well, Zimbabwe, I find all of Africa extremely interesting just because there is so much chaos and so much trouble. And we've seen with Kenya recently that just when you think the country is stable and doing well, things can change very rapidly. So Zimbabwe has been an issue for quite some time, ever since the Ian Smith and the whites lost power and Mugabe came into power, they faced a lot of difficulties. Now, Mugabe and his supporters would say that some of the difficulties that they've faced have been a result of IMF meddling and whatnot. But I think fundamentally what you have is all the white farmers were kicked off their land and were replaced by largely Mugabe's cronies who took over the land but were unable to farm. And then there was a lack of food and lack of production that led to hunger, all sorts of ridiculous economic policies that led to incredible inflation and appreciation, depreciation of the currency and just general chaos. But what's more important in Africa generally is China's role in Africa. Now, China, like I said earlier, doesn't have oil of its own, unlike some of the other major powers. So it's been trying to get into both South America, but more importantly, Africa, in order to secure oil deposits that are out of the hands of the United States or other competitors. And what we've seen for the past number of years is increased Chinese influence throughout Africa. And one of the reasons why China is able to gain influence is that unlike Western powers, it doesn't interfere in the domestic politics of the country. And in places like Sudan and Darfur, they've been under a lot of criticism for that policy, but it has been very effective. Now, what the United States has done in response to China's increasing power in Africa is they've set up a new military command, AFRICOM, with bases, one near Nigeria, one in the Horn of Africa, and then one, I believe it's a little bit up in the north, much to the initial dismay of South Africa and Nigeria, which are two of the region's powers, but increasingly they've become more willing to accept that reality. But there's going to be, in coming years, a battle between China and the United States over the control of African oil and African resources more generally.
Very interesting analysis. Nico, can you tell us about your websites?
Absolutely. There are two websites that I currently operate. One has been up for a number of years. It's called leftlib.org, leftlib.org. And the lib stands for libertarian. So initially it started off as somewhat of a political philosophy website, but over the years it's grown and grown and become much more focused on geopolitical issues. And that's a free website, and all sorts of different articles and news items relating to geopolitics are posted up there daily. More recently, however, I've launched a new website called geopoliticalmonitor.com. And what that is a site that is meant for people who want a accurate, unpropagandized understanding of what's going on in the world, but don't necessarily have the time to slog through all the different articles themselves. So the purpose of the site is to be a quick, accurate, and condensed source for people to learn about geopolitical issues.
I see. And can you tell us about the subscription on geopoliticalmonitor.com?
Absolutely. So leftlib.org is an advertised-based website. There's some banner ads and whatnot up on the side. But Geopolitical Monitor offers a subscription service as well. And the site has been up for maybe about 4 or 5 months, so it's relatively new. But as the site grows, there'll be more and more benefits to subscribing. And one advantage to subscribing now is that you can lock in at a very low rate. So some of the benefits to subscribing are that all the articles will be available to you immediately, and there'll be no delay, which will be the case for the free content. And also there are audio versions of many of the articles, all the exclusive content for those who are on the go, who have their iPod or MP3 player, and don't have time to sit and read all the different news items.
Excellent. And I understand the content on Geopolitical Monitor is broken into 4 main categories. Can you tell us about the 4 categories of content?
Absolutely. So there's a news category, which is updated daily. And what is done with that section is all the different alternative and mainstream news sources are scoured each day to pick the 5 most important issues. The 5 most important news stories, and those are posted. And what that does is allows someone who wants to know what's going on to go and quickly get those 5 important issues without having to slog through all the different news sources. We also have situation reports, which are more in-depth analyses of important events going on in various regions. And then there are weekly forecasts, which are a summary of events that are going on in the past week, and also a forecast of what's likely to happen. And there are a number of those posted up there now. And then finally, there are backgrounders, which, James, you have just recently written one yourself that's been posted up on U.S. Rendering, which is quite interesting. And the backgrounder, the purpose is to provide more of a timeless look at important items for understanding the world. One issue with a lot of news sources, especially propagandized news sources, is that they alter one's more fundamental framework for looking at the world. So the backgrounders challenge some of the conventional wisdoms, some of the status quo, and they bring up issues that aren't discussed in mainstream press. So some examples are CIA operations in South America, and one that has gotten a lot of attention recently, having been posted on a number of sites, and that's an article on FEMA camps in the United States, where FEMA has been building concentration camps all throughout the U.S. with no explanation as to what exactly they're going to be used for.
Absolutely, and I do encourage all my listeners to take a look at those backgrounders. Can you tell us about your websites in terms of why did you start your websites, or what motivates you to maintain your websites?
Well, it's an interest in world events and geopolitics, and more importantly, it's a realization that the news sources that are available tend to be woefully inadequate when it comes to covering these issues, because so many stations, so many different news sources are either outright propaganda networks, and there's a long history that's been exposed of the CIA infiltrating certainly American-based media as well as media abroad, but also a site that will focus on geopolitical events for those who want the that targeted approach. So what motivates me is a desire to see unpropagandized news information and also just an interest and passion for geopolitical issues.
And I understand there's a special deal for listeners to the Corbett Report to subscribe to the Geopolitical Monitor.
Absolutely. There is a coupon code on the subscription page. And sorry, James, you'll have to refresh my memory. The coupon code for listeners of the Corbett Report is...
I believe it's J Corbett, J-C-O-R-B-E-T-T.
So anyone who wants to subscribe to the site now will both get a discount in subscription of $20 for a total of $40 per year. We'll lock in at that low rate, and we'll also support the Corbett Report and the podcast that James does each week.
All right, Nico, it's been a very enlightening time talking with you. Thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Well, thanks for having me.